Bonk.
Dan.
How you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing great. Sitting here. Is this technically a holiday weekend?
I think so, yeah. I'm sure everyone listening to this is probably recovering from a Thanksgiving dinner, post-Thanksgiving dinner bliss with all the leftovers and whatnot. Maybe you're still with your family. Maybe you just got home and you're getting settled. But thank you for spending your weekend with us.
I mean, if Thanksgiving's on a Thursday and then this podcast comes out Saturday for patrons, Sunday for everyone.
Yeah.
Like, what's the typical recovery time for like a real gorging meal?
Yeah, I don't think it's that long. Next day, you're probably up on your feet. But I feel like typically there's that like leftover, you know, the Thanksgiving leftovers are arguably more popular than the day of meal. You know what I mean?
That's the thing. It's like when people talk about like the holiday, like kind of gorging and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's not just, you know, Thanksgiving and then the 25th of December.
No.
It's like the residual stuff as well.
I wonder like how much the pandemic and like more people working remotely and out of offices will affect that, because I know a lot of the issue for a lot of people was just like being in an office environment, and whenever there's a holiday or whatever, there's just an endless supply of like pastries and goodies and treats and people bringing in home baked goods and everything, and it's like you don't want to be rude, and also it's so delicious. So
well, I had my crown done, my dental crown done the day after Halloween, and all the nurses were talking about like, oh my god, our break room right now is just nothing but just like a mountain of candy. It's like, you're a dental office. Like, I feel like, well, I mean, dentists probably engage at some point, right? Like in imbibe. What's the word I'm looking for?
I'm sure they do. I can't imagine every dentist completely abstains from sugar.
Yeah. But yeah, when you're in the office, like I remember at Giant Bomb when I was there, they had like at the front, they had a giant thing of Starburst. And then like on the way to the actual studio, there was a giant thing of little Snickers. Mm-hmm. And it's like, those are like my two absolute favorite. Oh, and there are also Paydays in there, which like these are some of my favorite candies ever. And you just kind of have to like tell yourself like, okay, I know those are there. Mm-hmm. I know they're free and mocking me in a big clear tub. But you just have to learn how to say no to that. You know?
If you're anything like me, like once that seal is broken and I let myself have some, then it's like, well, all bets are off. And every time I'm walking by that, at least for that day, I'm grabbing some.
It's easy to justify for sure.
Yeah. I wonder if that will help people kind of stay on track a little bit. The fact that they're not, you know, inundated with stuff all the time. Like obviously when I used to work in office, we obviously had like the birthday celebrations. Whenever there was someone's birthday, we'd get a cake from Magnolia, and you know, we'd always have the kitchen stocked with stuff. And especially during the holidays, all the, you know, when I worked at the David Lynch Foundation, all like the donors and stuff would be bringing stuff. So it was just like a constant stream. You just have to like put your foot down and kind of be like, I can't.
I've always been simultaneously jealous of and also glad I don't work at one of those crazy offices. Like I've seen a lot in the video game industry, mm-hmm. like when I've gone to Epic or Valve or Twitch headquarters, where it's like there's literally an entire, like, sometimes it's like a whole floor, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's like personal chefs. And then here's like the candy aisle where it's like the biggest candy. If this was at a grocery store, it would be the most lavish like candy aisle. But it's just like free. You just grab it.
Yeah.
And it's just like every type of food you can imagine. Also a ton of healthy options and things like that. Or when I've been at catering at my current job, it's just like it's all here and it's all free. Like, I feel like I've been jealous in that moment, but I've also been like, oh my God, if this was my day to day, if I worked at Valve or worked at Epic or Twitch or something, it's just like,
yeah,
how would you say no?
Yeah. I know the EA campus in Vancouver, like their cafeteria is huge, and it literally has like every type of food you can possibly imagine. Sushi, salads, ramen, pizza, like literally anything. And yeah, it's all just there. I mean, but I think it's not free though. I think,
That's Nintendo has one of those things, but you do have to pay for it.
They like weigh the plate or whatever.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Nintendo. Yeah. I can't remember how that worked, but I remember eating there once. And yeah, this is one of those weird experiences for me, just like eating at the Nintendo cafeteria in Seattle. That was my first trip I did with Game Informer was to Nintendo. And it was just like, holy shit. Like I'm like 25 years old and like I'm at Nintendo. Like,
it's the space between like that. That's very serendipitous. The like chasm between like AAA studios, like, and more just like, you know, A or smaller studios is so massive. Like I went to this one studio once and you know, they're making well-known games, but like they didn't have a cafeteria or anything. Like, you know, they when we would go to these studios, they tend to like set up stuff for us so we're comfortable and
yeah, or cater something in or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was just like, you know, I obviously it's not critique, but just for comparison's sake, it was just like a fold-out table with like some coffee and like some like weird almond cookies versus like this just massive spread at this other place. And yeah, it's the chasm is huge. The fun money that certain places have is way.
These places that have like campuses and stuff like that. It's just like, it's a different thing. I remember you say AAA and A, and I remember when I went to Visceral, when they Visceral was trying to like open up a Canada version or whatever. It was in Montreal I went to. And I remember we got on a thing with the leader of Visceral, and he was like, you know, there's AAA, but you know, we're not here to make AAA games. No, we're making, I got a thing I say all the time at the office, quad A all day, baby, quad A all day. We make quad A games. I was like, okay, you don't need to do that. Which I do remember in Dead Space 3, there was like a gift shop, like a dilapidated, like apocalyptic alien gift shop type thing. And there were t-shirts on the rack that said quad A on it. And I remember talking to Ben Hansen, be like, oh, there they love that quad A saying there. Like,
now I don't hear that so much anymore. I hear AAA plus.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You don't need to keep. You can just say AAA.
Yeah, you could just say like indie or AAA. I mean, like.
Yeah. Or, you know, the lost art of the B game, of course.
Right. Which it's highly controversial.
I love my B games. I love them. But hey, you know what's not a B movie? Actually, I would say it's a B movie. A real bonk movie.
Ah.
We got Under the Skin.
That's right. One of my favorite movies. Dan and I had an opportunity finally to sit down together and watch it.
You've been talking about it it's been about a year since you saw it.
I've been talking about it nonstop for a full 365 days.
It's the only thing she's talked about. Yeah. All these other podcasts you've heard have been in the can for years. It's just been under the skin since then. I distinctly remember the first time you watched this because we were in Stanford in the apartment, which was small. And so, you know, even if I was like,
it was a nice size apartment
for an apartment, yeah. But like an apartment, apartments in general are smaller than houses. And
generally,
so,
yes.
Yeah. So like now when you watch stuff or play stuff and I'm streaming, I have no idea. You know, we've got a couple of rooms between us and like, I can't hear it at all. But you were right on the other side of the wall in Stanford. Mm-hmm. And I was streaming one night and I just heard just these crazy sounds all the time. Like I wasn't hearing a lot of dialogue. I was just hearing like very unnerving music and sounds basically. And I remember on the stream saying like, what the hell? I'm hearing some I don't know what Bonk's watching right now, but it's some crazy stuff. And then I went out and you told me it was Under the Skin. And I came back and I told the stream. I was like, oh yeah, she's watching a movie called Under the Skin. And everyone's like, oh yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. There's some weird sound stuff going on there.
Yeah, the score in this movie by Mika Levy, I think is how you pronounce her name, is absolutely incredible. It's like mainly strings. It's so eerie. It's like very minimalist. And like you just mentioned, there is not a lot of dialogue in this movie.
Not a lot that matters, certainly.
I don't think any of the dialogue really is important at all. But the music, it really fills in the gaps there. Like audio-wise, it carries that movie so beautifully. And just like the music is very minimalist, so is the movie. I mean, yeah, like it's the exact opposite of like an Aaron Sorkin movie where like dialogue, like there's, you could watch this movie on mute and have an idea of what's going on.
I mean, to be fair, I don't think I understood a lot of the dialogue. It's in English, but they shot it in Scotland with Scottish actors. So there's a lot of thick accents. Mm-hmm. We didn't have subtitles on. Or did we? Did we turn it on? We didn't. Yeah. And I remember like there were these scenes where these guys would come up to this van that Scarlett Johansson's driving around. And they'd be talking, and I'd be like, I caught none of that, 0% of that. And none of it really mattered.
Yeah, it's not like you have to pause and be like, oh, can we go back and hear that? Because, yeah, it doesn't matter. And actually, it's interesting. A lot of these actors that are in this movie is actually candid, and they didn't know that they were part of a movie until after the fact.
Which is a crazy way to film a narrative movie. You know, like, you'll know of things like Jackass or things like that, where it's like, oh, these bystanders, you have to get releases after the fact to be like, hey, we want to get your reaction on this candid camera type thing. But this is like a movie, you know, it's almost like, remember Nirvana, the band, the show, where there's that constant thing of like, wait, who's an actor here? Who's not? Mm-hmm. Here it's like Scarlett Johansson is the lead actress. And then there's like the motorcycle man. Mm-hmm. But outside of that,
well,
like,
I mean, obviously all the people that are going into the void are actors that were, I mean, not, maybe this is their first role. I know they have like a lot of like people that haven't acted previously.
Right.
But specifically the people that she encounters like on the street while she's driving that she stopped to talk to.
Right.
A lot of those people from what I understand, are not actors at all.
Well, I was curious because I was reading about it, and they said that they had to get the releases after the fact. And they said some of these people that they approached, they had to explain what the movie was and explain that if they wanted to be in it, like the level of extremes they would need to be involved with. So that made me wonder, like, wait, are some of the guys that like followed her back to the void mm-hmm. and like some of like are naked and stuff? Mm-hmm. Like, were some of those like just people that signed off on it?
Interesting. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. But I mean, I certainly don't recognize anyone in this movie except for Scarlett Johansson.
Which made me wonder too, if this was like, if the director was Scottish. It's Jonathan Glazer, right? I believe he's actually English. And then Scarlett Johansson, is she American?
Yes.
Yeah. So interesting choice to like shoot this in Scotland, you know?
Yeah. It is like, you know, there are so many beautiful like stretches of land in Scotland. I could see why. But yeah, Jonathan Glazer, since you mentioned it, he's actually known mainly for being a music video director.
I could see it with this.
Yeah, he directed Virtual Insanity, the Jamiroquai video.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and this was only his third feature film. He's only done three.
It's so interesting because like Virtual Insanity is so known for this like unique set and the filming, like, you know, the way the treadmill is kind of moving him around. It's a very like high concept mm-hmm. and execution music video. This is, in terms of the direction, it's not super flashy.
No.
There is, outside of like when Scarlett Johansson brings people to this void, where it is very visually stark and stunning, mm-hmm. where they're kind of walking into this tar and stuff like that, it's fairly straightforward.
Yeah, yeah, and the parts, like when she is bringing people, just very briefly, she is an alien, so an alien that seems to like assume other, you know, bodies, like female bodies.
So humanoid shaped like mass.
Yeah, she looks like a human, but she's like functionally not a human. But yeah. She, like, that's the thing about this movie. It doesn't give you a ton of information. You don't know, you don't have an explanation for a lot of stuff, but what you can gather is that she's an alien, some kind of extraterrestrial, and she is hunting men, essentially.
Yeah, and that much is kind of clear. The fact that she's like going around hunting men, mm-hmm. certainly clear. But I feel like if I had not heard like at least like a blurb about this movie, I don't know how clear the alien thing is. Like at the beginning, they show like there's like a kind of a space type thing, but you don't see her like arriving on a ship or anything like that. So it's like, did you realize from the beginning? Did you know this was about an alien?
Prior to watching the movie, I knew it was like about Scarlett Johansson. It was like, yeah, I knew she was an alien. Yeah.
Okay. I guess the novel was more explicit.
Well, this is so loosely based on the novel. I was reading about it. The novel is way more fully fleshed. This is extremely like minimalist interpretation. It's even calling it interpretation is too much. It's like so loosely based on the novel.
Sure.
I mean, there are clues, obviously, like you kind of see her becoming like testing the language in the very beginning, or you don't see, you hear her like trying to speak like a normal person, you know, getting used to the language and stuff like that. And you could see her eyeballs like kind of forming and stuff.
Oh, that part, those shots at the beginning of the eyeballs. First of all, eyes are fucked up when you see like close-ups of eyes. Mm-hmm. And this is like a super close-up of an eye. There's so much going on in an eye. And they're just so, eyes freak me out. They're so delicate. Mm-hmm. And like just the close up and you see all the spindly things coming off. Like, do you get that at all?
Not really. I think I, like most people, like eyes getting stabbed is hard to watch. But like, I think eyes are really interesting.
Interesting, yeah. I'm just glad I watched like what a LASIK procedure does after I got LASIK because I don't think I'd be able to do it. Have you seen what it looks like?
Yeah, I know. It's like they peel off like layers. Yeah,
yeah, it's a whole thing. But yeah, you're talking about at the beginning. They showed the eye. So was that supposed to be like the formation of her like human pupil?
It seems like that, yeah, because it started kind of just opaque and then, yeah, all the other stuff starts, all the details start filling in. And so it's Scarlett Johansson, who in the movie doesn't have a name, and this motorcyclist who seems to be like her handler. And at the very beginning of the movie, you see him like collect this body from off the side of the road. And it's not clear if this was like Scarlett Johansson's predecessor. I assume that's what it is, because it isn't just a lifeless corpse, because the body does like cry.
Oh, the woman.
Yeah, the woman that's found off the side of the road that the motorcyclist brings in the back of the van so that Scarlett could take her clothes, and assume that role. So it the fact that she was crying and stuff, it seems like these aliens, like as they, you know, continue to engage with humans, they start to empathize with them.
Okay.
And you know, that's obviously what happens to Scarlet at, you know, towards the end before she gets lit on fire. But like, I think that's probably what happened to this woman as well. Just being among, you know, society and experiencing humanity and like,
getting to know people and their stories and stuff.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting aspect of the movie, to just kind of watch her kind of resolve that, like the fact that she looks so human and, you know, she wants to be like that part when she's eating cake and stuff and she just retches it up, you know?
Yeah. And there's a lot of parts of her like inspecting herself mm-hmm. in her own body and like looking in mirrors and like, yeah, trying to eat, things like that. At one point she's like in bed with a guy and she takes a lamp and starts looking at her vagina, you know?
Yeah. Just like mystified by it. And that's another thing that's really interesting. I mean, Scarlett Johansson is like arguably like one of the most gorgeous women, and she's fully nude in this movie. And like, it's not sexualized at all. Like the way that it's presented is like,
it's cold.
It's very cold. And she's just like analyzing herself and like you, it's not at all. There's no like level of sexuality.
It's like a medical textbook or something, you know, mm-hmm. it's just, there's nothing erotic about it at all.
Yeah. Which is it's an interesting contrast because like her main function on Earth is to, you know, essentially seduce men into following her back to these dilapidated houses, which, I mean, like, Dan, if you were single and like an unbelievably hot woman like seduced you and like, you know, you were rearing to go or whatever, but she brought you back to this horrible looking dilapidated house in the middle of nowhere, you wouldn't willingly enter that place, would you? I mean, some of these houses look like they've been like previously burnt. Do you know what I mean?
That's the thing. If we're talking about like literal, like bombed out houses and stuff, probably not. But if it was just a shady house as a single man, you get in a certain mindset and you're like, look, let's go wherever.
Yeah. And it's funny. I think that the movie kind of communicated that as well. Cause you see the guy's expressions at some points, like when they were entering the house, like looking around like, oh, this is a little weird. But I love how the movie introduces like exactly what her process is. It does it so slowly. First, like she picks up a guy in the car, and then she picks up another guy in the car, and you see her go into the house. And then she picks up another guy and they go into the house, and then you see him step into this like black void. So like during that phase, you know, I would imagine if this was literal, then the men in the situation would probably be responding in some way to the fact that they just entered a black void.
Right. Yes.
So I think like this is probably like very like symbolic.
That's what I assumed, because like, you know, I'm not great at picking up metaphor in movies. See our mother experience when we saw that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's the thing. It's like, yeah, sure, a dilapidated house in a shady area. Yeah, okay, you'll deal with that. But like, if I walked into a place and it's a literal like black void, it's like, hang on a second.
Yeah.
This seems metaphysically, there's an issue here, you know?
Those scenes are shot, I think they're shot so incredibly, because the characters in their clothes, as they shed their clothes as they're walking, that's in like fully lit. But the area around him is like completely black.
Which lighting wise, mm-hmm. like that is a lighting is a pain in the ass with filming, and like that must have been an undertaking. Like a very specific room had mm-hmm. to be made. But they're lit incredibly well.
Yeah, one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when you actually see what is in the void, like like black liquid abyss. It's so creepy. It's like this kind of existential horror that's akin to like if you ever. Like no clip through a wall in a video game, mm-hmm. and it's just like endless white, like purgatory.
Like I'm not supposed to be.
Yeah,
here,
it just feels weird. You know what I mean? It's almost scary because you feel like there needs to be something. And this is just like a limitless black void that this guy, this victim is submerged in. And you see like he's kind of losing control of his body. They start twitching. It's almost like the liquid, whatever it is, can manipulate their
like a jellyfish.
Yeah,
or something. Yeah,
yeah, it's like. Yeah, making them pulsate and stuff like that. And he sees this other victim come floating near him, who's like, if you can imagine, like if someone's outer layer of skin is just like blown up and like dried out, and like it's just like a loose layer of skin, and they're bloated and gross, like as if a corpse has been underwater for a really long time.
Yeah, you can't even like tell that there's organs. It's mm-hmm. like soft and everything, and there's like a hint of a face. Mm-hmm. Like that is the defining part of this movie to me. Is just that like, oh my god, the horror. Like he seems conscious. Like, you know, they're yeah. like seem aware and indescribable horror in that moment.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, to be from like about to get it on to just like be
the wide. Chasm,
but he actually is conscious, and the latest person to join the void like goes to touch his hand, and once the other guy responds and like squeezes his hand, and the other guy is like, oh shit, he's alive. It's like you hear this loud snapping sound. And then all of a sudden, like the other guy, the guy that's been in the liquid for a while, just kind of like all the substance drains out of his body. And he's just like a shriveled, like just the outer skin is left.
Just like kind of collapses in on itself. And it's just, there's no resistance. It's a freaky fucking thing to see.
Yeah. Like, it's really freaky. And then it like shows, I guess his meat being like drained through like some kind of like weird, like, I don't know, what would you call that? Like a pig trough
type thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so, just to emphasize how minimalist this movie is, that's the only time we ever see that. Like the movie doesn't go back to that a bunch. Like that's, so that's the picture you have in your mind. Cause it doesn't need to, you know, show that a bunch of times.
No. And during that scene, when the first guy goes in, I'm kind of thinking that like, oh, it's like a sensory deprivation tank type of thing. He's just kind of floating there and his body's still kind of like normal. And then you see the other guy and it's like, oh, you don't want to be in there for long. It's like how your finger's kind of raisin when you're in the bath too long. It's like, imagine if you were just in that for like millennia, basically. And it's like, oh, you're just a raisin person.
One of the other scenes that really affected me was when the woman, Scarlett, is trying to talk to this guy on the beach, the swimmer, who seems to be alone. She's making conversation with him. And then they get interrupted because this couple like swims out into like the ocean is very like a lot of waves. It's a crazy ocean.
It's like the end of Point Break.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess their dog goes too far out in the ocean. So this couple goes after them. It goes after the dog. They swim out there, but the sea is so rough and it's incredibly dangerous. And the swimmer, you know, notices what's going on. The swimmer that Scarlett was talking to, and he goes to try to save the guy. But as soon as he brings the husband back on shore, the husband runs back into the water, try to save his wife. And they all end up dying. But one of the most affecting things for me was like, their little baby was on the beach. And like, you know, Scarlett was completely oblivious to, or didn't, you know, even acknowledge the baby, who's just left on the beach and like crying like crazy. Cause, you know, the swimmer is exhausted from saving the guy. So she comes and like smacks his head on the rock to take his body. And so she's walking right past the baby and walks past him again. And then later the motorcyclist comes to, I guess, collect that guy's belongings, to, you know, leave no trace or whatever. And the baby's still there. And it's it's at night now. And the baby's just crying alone on the beach. And then we find out later that the baby disappeared.
Well, so. And if it is this thing where it's like this alien that is trying to like collect samples of this other species and stuff. I mean, isn't that kind of how, like, let's say for some reason in some hypothetical, we were tasked with like, hey, we had to go like find a grasshopper and kill it and take a sample back. Like, if we had to do that for some fucking reason, if we took the grasshopper, we wouldn't like be affected by like if there was another grasshopper nearby and we wouldn't be able to recognize that it was distraught and things like that. We'd just be like, okay, well, here's the grasshopper I had to get. Like you wouldn't think twice. So like she probably wouldn't even realize that like, oh my God, this is a human and it's distraught. What is it going to do? Like she doesn't, what does she fucking know or care?
You know? It's a really interesting instance where you actually see her like, because usually she's acting like a human around other people, right? I mean, to the extent that she can. But in that case, it's just like the most human thing would be to try to help this baby. And she's just like completely ignoring it. And and then to see the baby again later and that same night is just very, very disturbing.
Yeah.
The moments where she's trying to grapple with like how to be human or not is, or how to be human or, and how to try to maintain her like extra terrestrial objectivity is really interesting. And obviously the motorcyclist starts to like catch on to her, you know, developing empathy and like is inspecting her at one point. And, there's the one scene with this guy who has like, his face is just covered in tumors and it's really interesting, sequence. And she, like, this guy's obviously lonely. He shops at the grocery store at night, I guess, so he's not made fun of or whatever. Stared
at.
Has,
like, a hood and stuff.
And it's a genuine affliction. This guy is, like, legitimately covered in tumors.
Who has an identical twin that does not have the same affliction. I found a story about it, and, like, I guess they looked exactly the same until they were five, and then he, like, hit his head, and the bump didn't heal, and then, like, it turned out he had this genetic disorder, and the other one didn't. Mm-hmm. And so, it's crazy seeing pictures of them as kids looking identical and then vastly different now at 31.
It's really sad, but, she, you know, being an extraterrestrial, like, she can't necessarily recognize what is wrong with him or how he looks different.
Right.
So she's, you know, treating him and trying to seduce him like she would any other guy, and, like, he's obviously very not used to and made uncomfortable by that.
He's like, what's good? Something's going on here.
Yeah. And like, she lets him like touch her neck and stuff like that. And I read that, they actually adjusted the script in accordance to what like that actor suggested would like work on him. That kind of interaction.
Wow.
So yeah, it's really sweet. And then she goes and voids him up. But then when she's walking down the stairs of her house,
she lets him go.
Yeah. She, after he's entered the void though, like he does enter.
Void him, like brings him into the void and then lets him go.
Yeah. She catches a glimpse of herself in the mirror and she realizes like, she looks at her face and then she realizes like what that guy looked like and how, you know, he probably struggled so much. And,
sure.
And then, but of course the motorcyclist, goes after him. It's unclear. And I guess it doesn't really matter, but the motorcyclist seems to be aware of all of her movements.
He seems like a handler of some sort.
Yeah, he's a handler, but he seems to like for example, he knew to collect the guy's belongings at the beach. He knew exactly where to find the tumor guy as he's running. I'm sorry, I don't want to call him tumor guy, but as he's like running through that field to escape, you know. And then he follows her at the end. He kind of witnesses her die. It's really interesting watching this movie and just trying to figure out like what her motivations are, because at a certain point, it seems like they kind of have a natural lifespan. Once they get to a certain point, they just kind of like break down or whatever and can't function correctly.
Like the aliens?
Because at a certain point, she's just running through the woods, this like dense forest in the middle of Scotland, like cold weather, like in heels, you know, and she just seems to be walking with no purpose whatsoever, just walking.
Imagine like if a dog got scared by something and ran off into the woods. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that where it's like, he doesn't have any, he's not like following the river to find a city. He's just kind of running around, you know, like broken down, you know?
Yeah, and it's makes it all the more creepy to watch. Like she runs into this logger who like eventually tries to like rape her. And, you know, just, she doesn't even know where she's going. And it's just... Yeah, that scene at the end where the guy's raping her and, like, tears her skin off, and then we see, like, the featureless black figure underneath her skin.
Just, like, this clay or something. Yeah.
I like that they don't hang on it for too long, you know? They just kind of, this is what is really going on down there, but they don't linger. And, like, the fact that we really only see her face for, like, a brief moment, and then we see her kind of trying to run away. And the guy douses her in gasoline and lights her on fire.
Yeah, like the guy is clearly trying to like hide his crime, but it's like he's obviously witnessed this thing too. That you can imagine what's going through his head at this point. He's like, you know, just tried to rape someone, trying to hide the evidence, but also must be like existentially like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah,
you know?
I kind of interpret it as like he doused it in gasoline and lit it on fire because it was probably to him some kind of abomination. You know, just kill it with fire.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Yeah, that's a really affecting thing at the beginning. Like, when she first stands up, mm-hmm. and she's got, like, a part of her lower back torn. It's like, why is it all, like, black down there? What is that? And it's just, like, then she, like, takes the face off, and you see, like, it's just, it's just, looks like a mannequin, yeah. You know? Like, yeah, it's freaky. Like, do you have any thoughts on, because, again, me not being great at reading into symbolism and stuff like that, like, things like, okay, at the beginning, it was an all white room when she was like changing into the other woman's body or whatever, or clothes. And then it was all like the black voids or whatever. Like you mentioned, they might be symbolic, like those rooms.
Well, I think less symbolic and more representational, like of, you know, again, this movie just gives you only gives you what you need to know.
Sure.
So we don't necessarily need to know exactly what the process of, you know, bringing, seducing or capturing a person is, and we don't exactly have to know the environment that she's in. It's probably some weird alien environment, you know?
I think, and it would actually probably ruin a lot of what makes this movie unique if it was overexplained. Mm-hmm. But if there's like some scientists be like, wow, she came down and this ancient race does, you know, like we don't need that.
Yeah. I tend to gravitate towards movies where there's this like role reversal where like, you know, as a woman, you can't help but sometimes feel like you're being watched or you feel vulnerable in situations that guys might not feel vulnerable.
Right.
For example, walking alone at night. And this movie, it like really flips it on its head because now it's these guys who are normally, you know, trying to prey on women, maybe not like rape or anything like that, but
the act of like bringing someone, like you all the time hear about guys trying to like bring women home. Yeah. And Yeah.
And now, you know, she's the one that's seducing and you know, bringing them down. It's really interesting, and it's a beautifully shot movie. I think the whole package, like it's just very, very sparse And the music is so perfect.
Oh, yeah.
It's so perfect for it. It's an incredible film.
Well, one guy we didn't talk about was the guy on the bus. And I was a bit confused by him at first because, like, it seems like he's legitimately trying to help her for a bit. Like, doesn't he? He's like trying to talk to her. He's feeding her. They're just watching TV together. He puts her in, like, a bedroom with a space heater and things like that.
Tries to take care of her.
Yeah, and part of me wondered, like, oh, did he think that she was, like, troubled or homeless or something and was trying to help her in some way? But then they do start, they do lay in bed and start, like, it seems like they're going to, like, mess around. Mm-hmm. And that's when she takes the lamp. But does she not kill the guy?
No.
Is that when she leaves and takes off, basically?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they, like, go on some date through some ruins or whatever. I think he obviously doesn't recognize that she's, you know, not of this earth.
Wouldn't you, like, if you were a dude and you're, like, talking to a girl or whatever and she's just completely just spaced out and shows no emotion or whatever, wouldn't that be, like...
I mean, I would think so, but, like, is it different if it's someone that looks like Scarlett Johansson, you know?
I just figured there would have to be so many questions about just, like, what's going on here, you know? Just, like, are you heavily met? Like, I think the last thing in that moment would be, like, oh, let's try to screw, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, she's clearly, like, very distant or heavily medicated at best, you know?
Like, yeah, yeah, for sure. Like, no, not making conversation, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, just kind of looking around and looking confused all the time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, when they do start, like, kissing and stuff and are about to have sex, like, she just immediately stops and, like, takes that light off the dresser and just, like, looks down and, like, I assume she's just, like, she's not able to eat cake. She's not able to actually have sex because she's just a, you know, not even a husk. She just only looks human. You know what I mean?
Yeah, she's probably not even really thought about the function of all the different parts of her body and things like that outside of just, like, walk, run, face, you know?
Yeah,
like,
she knows the bare minimum she has to know to get people in the car and to get them back home.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fascinating movie and, you know, it's, I really do enjoy or at least respect movies that will really be unlike anything I've ever seen before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes that's incomprehensible and just, like, kind of bullshit abstract or whatever, and I don't find any enjoyment in that. This one did a really good job of being, I wouldn't call it abstract, but it was very, it's not holding you by the hand at all.
Yeah.
And it's not telling you much. But there was enough there for me to follow. It's clear what's going on here. But even without dialogue and stuff like that, to be able to follow it like that, it was pretty remarkably made, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it's sci-fi told in the most, like, grounded, sparse way.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like you could not speak English and watch this and really, you know, get some enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, and you could totally see, knowing my taste in movies, why this agrees with me. Like, I have such a problem when exposition is so gratuitous and, like, just inappropriate. Like, you knew this person for, like, your whole life. Why do you have to be like, oh, you're my best friend since high school? Like, that's just so heavy-handed all the time. And I feel like how smart a movie is can be measured by how much exposition they feel they have to give.
Sure, yeah.
Because, I mean, you should be able to tell a story just visually, and I think this movie does that so well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very economical in how it tells its story.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's thank you so much for turning me on to this, and because I know you've been a fan of it for a long time, but yeah, it's not one that you'd forget about by any means.
Yeah,
you know?
And I can't see this ever being a movie that, like, of your own accord you probably would have watched.
No.
But, like, that's why, like, when you have your streaming nights or whatever, I take that opportunity sometimes to, like, watch movies that I feel like that I don't think you would necessarily be into. But then on rare occasion, I'll be like, oh, shit, this is really good. And I think Dan would like to see this.
Oh, and you're batting like 1,000, basically. Like, you know, we know each other very well. Mm-hmm. You know my tastes and stuff. And so, like, when you do come to me with a movie and you're like, hey, I think you would like this, I don't think you've ever been wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't 100% sure that you would. I mean, I didn't think you would love this movie as much as I do, but I definitely thought you could appreciate it.
Oh, 100%.
The next one that I want to do then is, if you're open to it, is The Gift. I think you would really like that movie.
I don't know much about that at all. So, but again, I completely trust your judgment on this stuff. So, yeah, we will get to it. But that's it for Under the Skin. Thank you once again, Bonk. And thank you to all of you listeners and patrons out there. It's patreon.com/paintingthestream. We keep it simple. It's $1 $5 tier.
That's it.
A month, just $5 a month, gets you early access to the episodes.
That's so good.
Gets you access to the Discord.
Wow.
Gets you ad-free episodes.
Yeah.
And also, it gets you, written for you by Bonk, Your own Bonk. Who? Bonk, do we have someone this week?
We sure do, Daniel.
Who do we have?
This week, we are honoring our friend Keith.
Keith, thank you.
Keith, if this is coming through your ear holes, you might be happy to know that one of my best friend's names was Keith, and his name was Keith Bird, and he was a little blue parakeet, and my grandma killed him when she put the water dispenser in upside down, and he died of not being able to drink water because we were on vacation, and she was tasked with watching them. And then Keith Bird died, and he was the best, and he would hang out on our shoulders while we watched Tommy play Blue Stinger, and he was just such a good little guy.
That story makes me so sad every time I hear it.
Well, Keith Bird, he's a good man. Oh. But let's hope your fate is better than Keith Bird's.
Yeah, drink some water if you're thirsty. Yeah,
keep an abundance of water handy. This Bonku is for you. The undying flame had consumed Keith and his soul, eternally damned.
Damn it. I was hoping Keith would get a positive one. Uh-huh. Nice fella like Keith, and he's eternally damned, as you put it.
Thank you, Scientists. Plague Accommodations, new EP out right now. They're on tour. Go check them out. If they're coming to your neighborhood, you won't regret it.
That is right. It's very clever. It's 20 minutes and 20 seconds, It's covering the pandemic. It was recorded during the pandemic, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's Tom Monday you're hearing right now, made the Fire Escape Cast theme song. So yes, check out Plague Accommodations from Thank You, Scientist on Spotify. And that's it for us this week. Bonk, thanks as always for joining me.
Thank you.
Yes, and we'll see you all next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.